previous program was the Gary Null Show, heard Mondays through Fridays at noon. It is now 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Hey everybody, Kevin O'Donoghue and Ben Starr back with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you guests and some ideas and concepts to try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And yes, we have our guest from yesterday back, Paige Bellenbaum, to talk to us about postpartum depression. You know, we put out to you a little while back that we wanted to do a women's series. And last week we did body dysmorphic disorder, and this week we're doing postpartum depression because, hey, mothers are women. And we want to do shows tailored to women and women's needs, and shows that people don't know much about. You know, you have a mother or a sister or an aunt or a cousin that has what's called the baby blues after they deliver birth, and sometimes even way before then. And, you know, you're familiar with that. You know, you realize this woman has been through something and, you know, she is a little blue for a couple of weeks after the delivery. And that's the norm. And we learned yesterday from Paige that 4 out of 5 women suffer from that. And so as a culture, we're aware of that. We have these women in our lives and we see this, and that's great. And so, you know, we cut them a break. But then what if it goes on past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 months, even 3 years? Is that possible, Paige?
It is possible.
3 years. So what's that all about? And how long a break can we cut women who are suffering, clearly suffering, from postpartum depression? So we're glad you told us that this was an important topic. We are doing our second day talking about postpartum depression. And I want to put out to you, send me an email, kevin@thepositivemind. We are going to continue doing women's shows. We have a long list of issues and topics. So send them out to me, kevin@thepositivemind. What issues about women's mental and emotional health and psychology do you think that we should talk about? And we want to do it with women in the studio. So if you're an expert and you think that there's an underserved population and an underserved or unexplored issue, send me an email, kevin@thepositivemind. Who knows? We might have you on. You join us here in the studio. We are very pleased, very happy to have Paige Bellenbaum back. Paige, how are you today?
I'm great, Kevin.
So let's get right into it, because I do want to read something about the cross-cultural aspect of PPD. You know, PPD does not only happen here in the United States. It happens worldwide. But whet people's appetite. Tell them about what they do in Nigeria with women and birth and pregnancy.
So unlike America, where maternal mental health is oftentimes virtually ignored, in many other cultures in Asia, Latin America, and in Africa, there is a certain period of time, it's a 40-day period of time, directly after the delivery of a baby, where a mom is basically, for all intents and purposes, bedridden to rest and heal after the delivery process. Her friends and family come, they cook, they clean, they help care for the baby. The mother is to relax, lay in bed, nurse, and sleep. And that is how other cultures deal with and consider and understand just the physical and emotional impact of childbirth.
And have these Nigerian women or people in other cultures attested to the value of that?
Absolutely. You know, you have, you know, we're so lucky to live in a place like New York where we have people from all over the world, from every different country. And when they come here, I've had a number of women in my office at the Motherhood Center say, I can't believe it. I can't believe what a dearth of support there is in American culture. If you look at England, thanks to the princess, she herself has come clean and open and shared that she's experienced postpartum depression with both the deliveries of her two children. She's pregnant again. And she has taken on maternal mental health as an enormous sweep throughout the country through education, treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, women in England, in Germany, and other European countries, the mental health of the mother is just as important as the physical health. Women will receive home visits within the first month of delivery where the focus from the clinician who does the home visits is on the mom. How are you doing? Mm. What's your anxiety? Are you feeling depressed? And treatment can start immediately because it's just a part of postpartum care.
And this lack of inhibition maybe of saying, I see you're not doing well, and we can talk about it. In this culture, not doing well in this culture is not really a strong point. It's not something that we jump in and notice. We tend to, as a culture, look past people who are struggling and not engage them and just think, oh, they'll get over it. They'll be done with that. I know in France, you get 16 weeks off.
Yep.
I mean, so this is figured into the healthcare system, into the commerce business system, that you get 16 weeks off after birth. What's it like in America? Do we have any statistics on, you know, there is leave, maternal leave for companies, right?
There's maternal leave. There's paternal leave. You know, despite the current political climate, I don't know that we'll see any more progress in this area. However, there are a lot more companies, both for-profit, non-profits, that are recognizing the necessity of providing paid family leave. So, you know, for example, at the Motherhood Center, it's full paid maternity leave. Some organizations do full paid paternity leave. They're in the minority, but we're seeing more and more corporations recognize the value and benefit to retaining their quality staff, and in doing so, subsidizing them while they're away caring for their child.
But they're not getting the care. Even though they're getting the paid maternity leave, they're not getting the attention that the women in these other countries are doing.
No, they're not. And in our culture in particular, there's such a focus on the baby, right? The whole time that you're pregnant as a woman, the focus is on you. Is it a boy? Is it a girl? Oh, you know, you look like you've dropped. But at least there's some attention on you. After the baby comes, it's all about the baby.
Yes.
How's he doing? Oh, he's so cute. Oh, this should be the greatest time of your life. Isn't this wonderful? So infrequently do people have an honest and frank dialogue with the mother and say, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. How are you feeling? Mm. And it's at certain paths across a mother's journey where those questions could and should be asked. And we're starting to see it evolve in the right direction. So at the six-week follow-up appointment for a woman post-delivery at the OBGYN check, more and more OBGYNs are asking, how are you doing? They're administering screens to determine whether or not a mom is experiencing postpartum depression. Pediatricians are a little bit slower to follow, but there are a number of pediatric practices that recognize, although the baby is my patient, if a mother's well, a baby's well.
Yeah.
And I need to know that a mother is well to ensure the health and safety of the child.
I would think that would be first. I mean, if you have an obese father and you have a brand new child, you know, you want to treat the father if you want to get the right nutrition for the child. So the same thing I think would go with the mother. Talk about the nonprofit aspect of what you're developing.
Right.
Because the Motherhood Center is becoming a nonprofit, or you were working on 501c status. Tell us a little bit about it.
We are. So in its current iteration, the Motherhood Center is a mission-driven for-profit. But we are in the process, and I'd say probably 6 to 9 months away from establishing a 501c3 or a nonprofit.
Right.
And ideally what this would allow us to do would be to offset the cost for care for low-income mothers. So we would be able to provide a number of scholarships for free care for low-income moms to come in and receive 4 to 6 weeks of treatment in the day program and have access to therapeutic support groups, individual therapy, reproductive psychiatry, medication management, all of those things to ensure that they get well.
And so 4 to 6 weeks is a good, at least, indoctrination or explanation of what is available, what you can do, and how you can feel better, at least in the short term.
Yep.
4 to 6 weeks.
Yep.
I want to read you some statistics. So yesterday we said 1 in 5 here in the United States, but you think it's...
I think it's 1 in 3.
1 in 3.
If all women, if we lived in a society where there wasn't such an enormous stigma around mental health, especially maternal mental health, we would see 1 in 3.
Right. Morocco, 11% postpartum depression. Let's see. Pakistan, 30%. Saudi Arabia, 22%. India, 23%. Chile, 50% in lower income women. Are you finding that that's happening more with lower income? We talked about external stressors yesterday.
Yep.
You can talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely.
50%, 20% in Brazil, 27% in Nigeria, 22% in Finland, 11% in France, where they have 16 weeks paid leave. I mean, if it's even happening in that percentage for women that are given 16 weeks paid leave, this is a real syndrome. This is a real mental health issue and crisis almost.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what these statistics tell you is that postpartum depression is universal and it doesn't discriminate.
It's universal. Because sometimes they say, oh, it's just industrialized country, it'll get over it or something like that. No, you can't get over this. China, 14%. Germany, 11% postpartum anxiety. Is anxiety as significant a factor as depression?
Absolutely. And I'm very happy that both myself and my colleague, Dr. Berndorf, the medical director and co-founder of the Motherhood Center, we've been approached by a lot of different media outlets recently to shift the focus a bit on postpartum anxiety. Postpartum anxiety is incredibly, incredibly common, just like depression. And like I mentioned yesterday, we do see high comorbidity factors, meaning that mm-hmm. both the depression and anxiety exist at the same time. But we also have cases of just PPD and just PPA, postpartum anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that we're starting to recognize this, because I almost think that the anxiety, the scale, and the place that women could show up on the line of anxiety, there's even more of it there, right? Even on the lower end of the scale, where a mom might feel mild symptoms of anxiety, of mm-hmm. feeling like maybe the baby's not getting enough breast milk because she can't see how much milk is going into the baby, and she might be worried that she's having undersupply issues, or, you know, perhaps she's worried that the baby isn't making enough wet diapers, all the way to ruminating and having thoughts of harm coming to the baby, or doing something wrong, or hurting herself or the baby. There's just this scale of anxiety that can go from mild to highly acute.
Yes, and yesterday Tammy called about wondering, am I doing it right?
Right.
I mean, there's an anxiety to that.
Right.
I believe, you know, and I often think in the mental health field, when anxiety is a little better than depression. I always have a little more hope when somebody's struggling with anxiety, because it says that there's an aliveness there that's waiting to relax.
Right.
With depression, you have to get the aliveness going first of all.
Right.
So how about that for today? Let's have callers who – yesterday we had terrific callers. We thank you all. And we'd like to put out the call today for women mothers who struggle with postpartum anxiety. Yes, if you've suffered from depression, postpartum depression, we want your call also. But postpartum anxiety, let's see how you're negotiating, how you're managing the world with postpartum anxiety. Now, yesterday, the external stressors. Obviously, if you're having financial stresses,
right.
Talk a little bit more about – well, let's first tell the symptoms.
Okay.
Okay? So postpartum depression is not your typical depression. Yesterday, we had Jane call in, who was weeping.
Right.
I mean, uncontrolled. That is a feature of this kind of depression that you're not seeing – that we don't normally see in our psychiatrist's office or therapist's office.
Right.
Crying is pretty universal.
Very universal. It's a release. And I would say probably 80% of the calls that we get on a daily basis that come into the Motherhood Center, women that are looking for help, if they're not in tears at the beginning of the call, they're mm-hmm. definitely in tears by the end. So some symptoms of postpartum depression, and as we did discuss yesterday, it does manifest differently than generalized depression at other periods of a man or woman's life, in this case a woman's life. Some things that we notice, first and foremost, just this sense of hopelessness, helplessness, worthlessness, an inability, an incapability to care for the child, an utter lack of confidence, or bond with a child. Yeah. You know, as I said yesterday, our society puts so much pressure on this myth of this unconditional love that as soon as the baby comes out and is placed on your chest, you feel this love that's so big and strong, you never could have imagined you could care for something this much. That's just a lie. That doesn't happen for every mom. When my son was put on my chest after a traumatic labor, I just wanted him off. I wanted everybody out of the room. I wanted to eat a hamburger, and I wanted to sleep for 7 days. That doesn't happen. That bond isn't always naturally there. Mm. Sometimes it's not there a week later. Sometimes it's not there 8 months later. So that lack of attachment we see quite frequently. Mm. Certainly a lot of crying. The other thing that we see a lot, I had a mother, a brand new mom of a seven-week-old in my office right before I came here, whose primary presenting symptom was rage and anger. And she described feeling such intense rage and anger towards her partner because she felt that the load of responsibility of childcare and caring for this fragile infant rested entirely on her. Her husband was working, but she was home alone all day with the child, all night. And she felt so angry that she hit the wall and felt horrible about it and said she got off the train on the way to see me in my office and almost got into a fight with somebody. She's like, this isn't me. This is not me. And it's so uncomfortable. I'm not like this usually.
Right, right. So this is a very, very different type of depression. And also the thought that, you know, most people who are dealing with depression only have themselves to think about. They say, oh, I'm in a bad way. I need to get out of this. I'm trying a lot of different strategies. When you're a mother, you're a mother for life.
You're a mother for life.
Is that a big factor in the anxiety or depression that the women are presenting?
It's such a big factor. And I think especially with first-time mothers, there's no perspective. When you're in that deep dark hole or in that ocean and you feel like you're drowning and all you want is someone to send you a life preserver, which is why at the Motherhood Center, that is our logo, a life preserver for that very reason. You have no perspective. And to you, having never gone through anything like this before, you are convinced that this is what your life is going to look like forever. Yeah. You're never going to go out again. You're not going to have any freedom. You're going to feel trapped. You're going to feel as though you're at the beck and call of this little infant that's totally unpredictable. And it feels like this is the rest of your life. And that's a dreadful feeling.
Yeah. My predecessor, Armand DeMille, my mentor, used to say that when you're depressed, you think that depression is like you don't think anybody in the world is happy. That you think everybody's depressed. You're depressed that way. I think with mothers, when you're a mother, you know, and the people that are coming at you and celebrating the birth of this child are happy and buoyant, you can't lie to yourself. They are not the ones who are depressed. You are depressed.
You are depressed. And I think one thing that's critical to take note of, and there's been some really interesting social media posts on this that show images of women who have makeup on, their hair is done, they're dressed well, they're smiling at their baby, they look like they have the perfect life. But what the text reads below that picture is, when I was taking this picture, I wanted to die. I was thinking about how I could end my life. And so what's different about postpartum depression and anxiety is that it can be easily covered up. A mom can look like she has it all together. She can pretend like she has it all together. But behind it all, she is feeling worse than she's ever felt.
Yeah, and Kim called yesterday, and she was shedding light on that very thing. Like she had a secret,
right?
That she was, you know, hiding from everybody.
Right.
A secret. We want to take your calls. 212-757-5555. We're talking about women and women's issues, and this is a service. We are trying to put out the information here. Postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, women suffering in secret. We do want to talk about men in this because there is such a thing as male postpartum depression, right?
Yep, there is.
So we want to talk about that. How about a father call in also? So
that'd
we
want,
you know, we're opening it. It gets bigger. Postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, and fathers who are struggling with postpartum. We want to take your calls. 212-757-5555. You know, yesterday, I mean, Daniel, a man called in and talked about his sister-in-law and that, you know, he just thought, why aren't you breastfeeding? That, you know, it's the natural thing to do. How could you not be breastfeeding? And this is another secret. Yep. Breastfeeding hurts.
It hurts. And, you know, one of the things, again, a mother that I just saw before I came in, you know, she had given up breastfeeding because she had a lot of issues doing it. The baby had a hard time latching. She stopped and she felt this enormous, enormous guilt. She felt like she had failed her baby. She had failed everyone around her because, you know, what we know to be true, that breast milk is better for a baby than formula. And she felt like she had made just the greatest blunder and error in making this choice. And I said, you know what? If you had continued to breastfeed and you were sitting here in front of me right now and you were explaining the turmoil you went through breastfeeding mm-hmm. and the fact that you couldn't sleep because you were pumping six times a night, mm-hmm. I would have looked you in the eye and said, I think you need to stop breastfeeding. Yeah. You need to sleep, and that's okay.
And that's a hard thing for the person to say.
Yeah.
And a hard thing for the woman to hear.
Absolutely.
But what a relief, you know, does she thank you a week later? Like, you know, you're saving my pregnancy. You're saving my child. I mean, there's such a relief. It's such a change with me not having to breastfeed.
There's a long-term reaction, right? And then there's this woman in particular. It was her first time coming in. And by the end of that 45-minute session, she looked like the weight of the world had been taken off her shoulders. All she could say on her way out the door was, thank you. Thank you so much. I thought it was just me. Thank you. I feel so much better knowing that this is common and that if I seek treatment, I can feel better and feel closer to my baby.
Let's take a quick call. Yeah. The number to call, by the way, 212-757-5555. We're talking with Paige Bellenbaum of the Motherhood Center discussing postpartum depression. And we have Selma on the line. Hi, Selma. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
I wish I had known about the center after my baby was born. What Paige was just mentioning earlier about going into rages and not knowing how to get help.
Take a moment.
My daughter got really sick. She got really sick. A few weeks ago, and I was so upset at everybody, and my husband wasn't helping. He was making things more difficult, and I ended up calling 911 because I didn't know what else to do. I needed help, and there was nobody to help me.
Okay, Selma.
Selma,
let's hear from Paige.
How are you feeling right now?
I'm just really upset because it cost me my marriage.
It cost you your marriage.
And so how old is the baby, Selma?
It's just two now,
she's two.
It was just, you know, it very similar, you know, feelings and thoughts from when she just got sick a few weeks ago to compared to, like, you know, the first few months, you know. It was just so, so stressful. I don't even know where to start to begin, you know, what I was going through, how I was feeling, and today's the first day I heard about your center.
Well,
you know,
Selma, don't feel bad because we've only been open for 8 months. It is appalling to me that it's taken this long in our society to recognize what an issue this is and how common it is that it took so long to open a space like this. What I would say, though, and I said yesterday, is that if gone untreated, postpartum depression and anxiety can continue. And whether your baby is 2, 3, or 4, you might really still benefit from speaking to someone or perhaps even going on medication. And I would invite you, at the Motherhood Center, we tend to treat moms from inception to 1 year post-delivery when the baby's a year old. But please give us a call, and we would be happy to work with you to try and find a good therapist who specializes in this work, a reproductive psychiatrist that perhaps you could see, and let's get you hooked up with some services
and
so you can feel
better. We'll give that number at the end. You clearly are not doing great yourself, so your baby was not doing well. You need to do the same for yourself that you were doing for your baby. So thank you for our call. Listen to the rest of the show. And there's help available. And you should be getting some support locally from friends and family. We don't know about that aspect. But we'll give out the number later. And thanks for your call, Selma.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
212-757-5555. That's the number to call. And we will be taking your calls for the rest of the program. 212-757-5555.
So there's the crying again. Mm. I mean, the crying is just, and you have to get right with crying. Crying is a beautiful thing. It's a healing thing. Clarity comes through tears.
Right.
You know what you need once you've had a good cry. So this is healing stuff.
Let's take another call. Pat's on the line. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Pat. Thanks for calling in.
Brave man.
Yeah, you know, I want to say I'm glad to hear this segment because I went through some serious issues with my daughter's mother right after our child was born, and it seems like it's postpartum is something that's not really addressed, and when it's addressed mainly as a women's issue amongst women,
right,
and not necessarily as a family issue.
Mm.
Not necessarily as something for men to understand as well, or even for women to understand as an experience that both parties go through. And
so we have two questions. One is, what were the difficulties, and two, what worked? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Honestly, I have to say that nothing worked.
Yeah.
One of the things that is big, the big issue is unless the mother is willing to actually acknowledge with herself that that's what's going on.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's going to work. When there was problems with breastfeeding, we had a lactation consultant. We had family all over the place, but it became a thing where, and I was also, willing to be home with the baby and everything, but it was a kind of thing where it was, nothing was good enough, no one was good enough, everyone was not going to be as attentive towards our baby as she was, so no one was allowed to really take care of her, and anyone who did, it wasn't good enough.
I want to stop you there and say that was the anxiety speaking. All of the things that you're describing are clear-cut examples of postpartum anxiety, just that constant fear. And the other thing I wanted to mention is I'm so glad that you said that this is a family issue. You're exactly right. This is a situation that is happening to a mother within a mother, but it's not just the mother that's impacted. It's her relationship with a baby. It's her partner. It's her best friend. It's her own mother and father. This is a situation that trickles in and penetrates into all of the lives of people around this mother that care for her. Earlier today, we had a whole family who had come with a new mom, her husband, her mother, her father, the husband's mother. You know, when you're lucky enough and you're in a situation where you have a support network around you, it's happening to everybody. And we really promote bringing partners in, bringing family members in, and treating the family as a unit, because you're spot on. This is happening to everyone.
Do you think that would have helped, Pat?
Well, once again, the issue is it only helps if the mother is willing to actually go in. Yep. And one of the issues I had, and it's why I'm very much glad that you're discussing this. I hope it becomes a bigger thing and it gets addressed in terms of family court and so on and such forth.
Yeah.
Is that we couldn't address anything, and for me as the father, what I noticed is because women aren't necessarily, because of the stigma, that, and that's what I noticed, a huge stigma behind the issue of being depressed, of having anxiety. There's a huge stigma behind not having that attachment. There's a huge stigma behind a woman feeling that, oh my God, my life is over. Or, I thought I knew what I was getting into, but now that this baby is here,
sure,
there's all this anxiety and there's this doubt and so on and such forth. And because there's so much of a stigma that it doesn't get addressed, what I noticed happened with us is that I, as the father, became the focus for all the rage, which is something that you were talking about earlier, this rage and anger. It wasn't because I wasn't home and wasn't helping, but it was because all these feelings behind that don't conform to the the image of the loving, doting mother makes the woman feel guilty. And if she can't address it and she can't accept it because there's social stigma behind it, then a lot of times somebody has to be the target, and sometimes
and
the father becomes the target.
Right.
And it's, once again, it's a family issue, because people need to really understand that, because it gets to the point where, as the father, even if you're doing everything, you know, if she feels that, you know, in any way resentful, then she feels like there's something wrong with her as a woman, because I can't admit to anyone that I feel regret about having this child.
Pat?
I can't admit to anyone that I feel resentment,
right,
and so I'm going to throw it on the father, and it destroys the family.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this call. You shed light on so many aspects of this. Gosh, we'd love to have your wife call. But you were, we don't want that, but you were a great call. We appreciate your call. Thanks
well,
again.
Thank you for addressing this.
Okay, we're
thank
gonna we're gonna take a break, and we will be back. Talk a little bit more about male PPD on the way back.
Help, I have done it again. I have been here many times before. I hurt myself again today, and the worst part is there's no one else to blame. Be my friend. Hold me, wrap me up. Unfold me, I am small.
Song is Breathe Me. Breathe Me. You say that song helped you.
It did. So this is a song called Breathe Me by Sia. And when I got over my postpartum depression and anxiety, it was much later. It was maybe like 5 years ago where I heard this song, and it just, it so spoke to me, that hopeless, dark, helpless place where I just felt like I didn't exist almost. So I thought it might be an appropriate song.
And do you do breathing as a treatment?
Absolutely.
Say a little bit about that.
So one of the treatment modalities that we like to incorporate and is really a best practice for the perinatal population is dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT, that really incorporates mindfulness, meditation, breathing. The whole emphasis is really being in the moment, right? I've spoken so much today and yesterday about how overwhelming and hopeless and helpless and awful postpartum depression and anxiety can be. A lot of DBT treatment helps a new mother focus on those glimmers of positive experiences and really start to move towards painting a positive narrative based on positive experiences that she's having with the baby to help lift her out of that depressive state.
We have a caller. Rosie is on the line. Hello, Rosie.
Yeah, hi.
How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Do you have experience with this?
I couldn't help to call because I feel this is a very important subject, and it was for me, and it still is. I have three children, and I decided not to breastfeed my third one because, let's face it, when you have to breastfeed, sometimes you have to pump. It takes the whole day, and I was neglecting my other two older. So I decided not to breastfeeding, and then I was going through very bad anxiety attack. During the night, I couldn't sleep. I was picturing the worst-case scenario, like if my house goes on fire, how am I going to be able to save my children?
And you didn't have that with the first two children, is that it?
No.
Okay.
This was just with my third.
Okay.
I was devastated. I was crying all day, and this worst-case scenario was coming in my mind. Mm-hmm. And the sadness was just beyond.
Rosie, I want to highlight something before you go on, and I mentioned this yesterday. It's nearly impossible to predict when and if postpartum depression is going to hit, right? We do know that if a woman has a history of depression and or anxiety, her chances are much higher. But some women experience it in the first pregnancy and not the second or third. Some don't have it the first or second, but do have it the third. So it can be really hard to predict when it's going to happen.
And to me, to my case, it was because my marriage wasn't that perfect. And I was so tired from the other two children. They went. They came one after the other. So I was lacking of sleep, and I was depressed before this third pregnancy. So everything hit with the third child.
Wow. And where are you now, Rosie? How are you feeling now?
I'm in a good place right now because I went right after that. Then I went through menopause. So I decided to not stop the medication. But my point is, I have friends that really need to go through medication, and they deny it. It feels like there is a stigma about it, and I'm a firmer believer that these medications saved my life, saved my children, my family, and my marriage.
Wow, Rosie.
So why not?
that's a great statement, and we're going to take you off and have Paige talk about the importance of medication for some women. So thank you very much for your call. You shed a lot of new light on this.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity of sharing. Thank you.
Yes. So the first two, no PPD, but the third one, this anxiety.
Right.
And she addresses the stigma. Now talk about that with medication. What is the stigma?
Absolutely. What I do want to touch on really quick before I answer that question is Rosie mentioned something that I think is probably one of the hardest things for pregnant and new moms to admit to, and it's what we call scary and intrusive thoughts. These thoughts that pop into your mind out of nowhere, like I might throw the baby off a cliff, I might throw the baby against the wall, I might trip and fall and land on the baby, the house might go up into flames. These thoughts, as clear as day, pop into your head and you have no control over them, and it can feel maddening. And it is one of the very common symptoms that's associated with this. So regarding medication works. We like to say the golden seal of treatment is therapy and medication.
Yeah.
And if it's acute enough, then the day program where you're getting day-long, week-long treatment for your severe and acute symptoms. But we know to be true based on research and data that there are medications that are virtually harmless for women to take during pregnancy and in the postpartum period while they're nursing. So oftentimes when the onset is pregnancy or postpartum and a woman is nursing, her greatest number one fear and adversity to taking a medication is, what is it going to do to my baby? Is it going to have an impact on the fetus? Is it going to come through the breast milk?
Right. And do we have enough data that that is not going to damage the child?
We do. We have data that strongly suggests that there are certain SSRIs, antidepressants, and other medications that have virtually no pass-through in breast milk, or to what, based on what we know, have had no implications, or like 0.0000001 implications during pregnancy. We know them to be safe.
Yeah. And so without it, a treatment must be very, very difficult. That pride can get in the way. Do you run into pride a lot? Like, is as an obstacle? I know Pat was talking about his wife saying, nobody can come near the baby. I can only do it. It's only me. There is must be a sense of pride in this creation, and now this is my baby. I mean, what about stubbornness and pride or personality obstacles?
I would replace pride with guilt and judgment. There is an overwhelming fear when a woman is facing this fate of depressive and anxious symptoms and is looking medication or therapy in the eye of, why can't I do this on my own? Why can't I be strong enough or normal enough or regular enough like all the other mothers to just be able to fix myself, which then compounds those worthless, hopeless feelings. I see very little pride walk through the door, but a lot more guilt and fear of judgment for not being that perfect mom that we all anticipate we're supposed to be.
And thank you. That's an obstacle with treatment of depression in general, guilt and judgment.
Yeah.
So if we can get past that, then we can start treating. Very much important in a new mother. We have another caller. Veronica is on the line. Hi, Veronica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. I also wanted to say that I related to your guest speaker. I, too, rejected my newborn after a cesarean section. I had three normal, natural births prior to, and I just did not want to see him. I was very angry. I just couldn't deal with my body shutting down and not being able to do what I had previously been able to do with my body. Once I saw him, I fell in love. They brought him to me a couple of times. I wouldn't look at him, but finally when I finally looked at him, I fell in love. So,
what a relief.
Yeah. But I was concerned because years later, I mean, like I said, I had four children. The three were natural. But he's now bipolar. I was wondering if those rejections and, you know, at birth had anything to do with it. I mean, he had three other siblings. He did fine. You know, I just don't know. When he became a teenager, everything changed.
Good question, Veronica. Thank you.
I would venture to say, and I'm a social worker, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I would strongly venture to say that there is no correlation whatsoever between those initial moments of you feeling a low level of attachment to him and the outcome of his mental health status now. And I really want to encourage you to take that in, because I would imagine that in drawing a conclusion like that, you might feel a lot of self-blaming, self-loathing, and guilt at the mere thought of there being a connection there. And I really truly believe there is not. There, you know, what you experienced in that moment was very normal. And, you know, one thing that we also find can be very closely connected to the onset of postpartum depression and anxiety is traumatic childbirth and labor, or labor that wasn't what you anticipated, right? And in that moment, you'd had three natural deliveries, you had a C-section, it wasn't what you signed up for, it wasn't how it was supposed to go. Perhaps in your mind, you felt as though your body failed you. Why is your body doing this?
Yes.
And as another mental health professional, I second the motion, Veronica. Now, you know, I don't see any connection there. And just in the hearing in your voice when you said you fell in love with him, have you loved him all your life?
Oh, yes, yeah. And continue to, yes.
So I think that that is much more of an indicator of the kind of mental health a child will experience going through life than anything. And this, you know, one experience with the child, you know, you're lucky you fell in love with him once that you saw him, and many mothers can't even get there. So, you know, so you've given him a great gift all his life. Bipolar disorder is treatable, is recoverable. You can heal from that. So there's a lot of hope. We appreciate your call, Veronica.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Cesarean. I mean, she was the first cesarean. Is there any issues with cesarean births and motherhood? And at the Motherhood Center, or any of these conflicts or problems?
I think that it can be, I'm going to lump it into that category of external stressors. So, and I also want to tie this up to this concept of another thing that we see come through the doors quite frequently is trauma. So many of our pregnant and new mothers have a history of trauma, sexual trauma, physical trauma,
abusive relationships.
Mm-hmm. Traumatic labor, like physically traumatic labor. Mm. One of the things we like to do while moms are with us is to allow them to process their birth story. I'd say 99% of the moms in there did not have the birth they signed up for. They did not, nothing went according to their birth plan. It was physically traumatic. It was emotionally traumatic. They had a run-in or a bad experience with a doctor or nurse who said something completely anxiety provoking to them. So it's very possible that if a mom was not ready to have a C-section and thought her birth was going to go a very different way, that experience opened the door for anxiety and depression to precede it.
Right. And I love that idea of keeping a journal of your birth and the birth process. It's a great gift to your child. So I think every mother, every woman going through this should write a journal from the moment they know they're pregnant till a year, let's say, afterwards. It's a great gift to your child to give later on, because no two labors are alike.
None, no. It's
right?
True.
And even if there are no trauma in your particular birth, it's nice to have the actual physical writing of your mother going through this down the road. So when you're in therapy, you can't complain it was about the birth.
Right.
That's what we're just looking ahead. We have Paul on the phone. Paul, thanks for calling. How are you?
Hi, fine, thanks. Thanks for taking the call. I think it's great that this kind of clinic is open, really essential. I was just wondering, I remember at the time when my son was born, it was a book, I think it was the book by Russell Blaylock, Russell Blaylock, called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, that he was talking about the role of omega-3s and how crucial they are for the baby, so crucial that the baby will draw them. If the mother does not have enough, the mother can become totally depleted, and that there seems to be a very high correlation between postpartum depression and omega-3 depletion.
What's the name of the book again?
The book is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. But that's, you know, that goes back quite a few years, and I've seen online quite a few references. Apparently there's a good number of studies regarding the link between essential fatty acids, the omega-3.
Paul, do you have any children? Have you witnessed postpartum?
Well, in my case, I don't know if I can say it was postpartum depression, but the postpartum anxiety I saw going on with my wife for a few years.
Wow.
And one time I took her to a woman who did hair analysis, and we got some mineral supplements. And a huge amount of anxiety was lifted in an hour.
Fantastic.
So that's also, you know, the kind, I'm wondering in the clinic, are you doing this kind of, you know, of course the psychological dimensions are huge.
Yeah.
But it's important, I think, to check the underlying physiological and nutritional issues. I'm wondering if that kind of, like mineral balance in the body or a lack of essential fatty acids having been depleted by the baby and these things, are these being checked as well?
Absolutely. So when women come into the day program, we always require a full set of labs to make sure that we know exactly what their vitals are and what all their labs look like. Because, yes, their medical status is very much so taken into consideration when we put together their treatment plan, whether it's prescribing them medication or therapy. We are very cognizant and pay very close attention to their medical state.
Paul, thanks for calling. Paul, I'm just going to follow up and say, send me an email. You sound like a guy I need to be in touch with. Paul, send me an email, kevin@thepositivemind.com. I want to explore this a little bit more with you.
Kevin, okay, that's great, Kevin.
Kevin at The Positive Mind. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye. 212-757-5555. We have a moment's break, 212-757-5555. So many issues he's hitting on. Talk a little bit about the fathers.
Right.
You know,
what a critical role, I'm going to say, partners play in welcoming the birth of a child and supporting mom. So we do know that postpartum depression and anxiety also exists in fathers and partners.
Diagnosable?
Yes, yes. We see it at lower rates, whereas we usually see about 20 to 30% in new and expecting moms. We see probably closer to 10 to 15% in new and expecting fathers. The way that it does tend to manifest more so in men, we see a lot more rage and anger. We see an acute inability to feel connected to and attach with the child, almost a fear and a repulsion and an aversion to be near the child or care for the child. So we do see it. We see that, and then coupled with that, like our earlier caller Pat, is we also see men really struggling with trying to figure out how to support their wife going through this, right? Mm. And so often, and I can speak for my own husband who tried to make sense of what was happening to me at that time, that sense of like, oh my God, I didn't sign up for this. Like, what is going on? Mm. Because we all buy into the myth that the baby comes and we're going to be this happy family and it's going to be the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to us. And when it doesn't go that way, fathers are oftentimes left holding, you know, holding the bag, trying to make sense of it all. And if mom is acute enough, becoming the full-time parent. Like, you know, mm-hmm. when we have moms that are right. experiencing psychosis or mania and have to be hospitalized, like, they need to sleep. So that means that dad is doing yeah. rounds at night feeding the baby.
212-757-5555. 212-757-5555. I know that new fathers are always and all diagnosable for exhaustion on some level. So are mothers. But, you know, This is sleep. Sleep is essential for mental health.
It's so essential. It's so, I was telling someone today that was in, I think once you become a mom or a dad, you realize everything you hear that sleep, you know, ensues good health and it's good for you. You really feel that as a new parent, whether you're struggling as a mom or a dad with some kind of mental illness or not. Sleep is critical.
So you have to treat the family. You have to treat the husband and wife together. Is that true?
I think there's different ways to do it. I think that needs to be a part of treatment, hands down. In the day program, our focus really is on the mom and the relationship between mom and baby and the relationship between mom and her partner. It's critical because men have to be, or partners have to be, armed with the skills, the understanding, the education to be able to know what is going on with wife or with mother. They have to know so that they can help and take care and realize that this isn't a forever thing, that they're going through a rough patch. Mom's going to get better, but these are the things you need to do to support her.
212-757-5555. And the improvement is measurable. I mean, you give these tests throughout, checking moods of fathers and mothers, right? That you can say, okay, you're going to get better. And here's an example. 3 months ago, you were feeling X, Y, Z. Now you're feeling this. And you can do that with fathers too, I assume.
So we, to this point, haven't been administering any instruments for partners, but
have to start.
We have to. That's a very good point.
I'm a guy, and it's a very good point. My brothers were exhausted.
Yeah.
With the third kid just was a killer.
It's a good.
The first two are tiring enough. I'm sorry.
No, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. What we do, and we're seeing more and more OBGYN practices and pediatricians using something called the EPDS, which is a 30-question screen that it really indicates where mom is on the level of acuity from mm-hmm. postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. We are at the Motherhood Center, moments away from embarking on research with Johns Hopkins that together we will be administering a full battery of different different tests that will really help us look at anxiety levels, the relevance of trauma, the ACEs score, the EPDS score, so many different categories and data points that can really help us zone in on who are these women, who is more susceptible to experiencing this, but most importantly, being able to show that this type of treatment works.
Beautiful, beautiful. Tell about the scholarships before we go. If somebody is in desperate need, themotherhoodcenter.com, desperate, desperate need, they can't afford, what's available?
So we do have a limited number of scholarships available to low-income mothers currently. As I mentioned previously, as soon as we establish our 501c3 process status in the next 6 to 9 months, we will be able to increase our capacity to take more low-income mothers. But it is critical to our philosophy and mission to serve and treat women across the socioeconomic divide.
We have Fred on the line. One last call. Fred, you're getting in here. How are you?
Doing well. I know my wife, when we had our son, it was I was able to be there if my wife had cesarean. And I mean, it was an awesome experience and everything. And when we get home, I think it was the last day when I brought our son home. We put him in the car seat and everything was great. And we got home. And then we both saw him, like, kind of slumped over to the side a little bit in the car seat. We both felt terrible, like, oh, man, why do we? Because we both sat in the front seat, and we felt terrible about it. And then my wife, I think that's when it hit her. She was like, oh, man, you know, why did I bring, you know, our son into, you know, such a terrible world and everything? And I was like, honey, you know, don't worry, it's going to be fine and everything. And she's, I'm like, you know, we believe, you know, we read the Bible and we pray and everything, my wife together. And
Fred, we have 1 minute. What is it you want to ask,
sure.
Paige?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was just hearing, like, what happened with us is that my mother-in-law was expecting support from her, but she was giving my wife a hard time. Being like, oh, you kind of have to suck it up or whatever. No. And we end up just pulling her into, I brought her into the bedroom because we shared the apartment. And we just prayed and, you know, about through the situation. And she was fine after that. And that's how she dealt with,
Fred,
dealt with it, you know.
Fred, thank you for being our last caller. We're going to take that answer off the air, but appreciate you calling. What is the role of mother-in-laws in all this? Or mothers? I mean, thank you, Fred, for that call.
So I just want to say there is a famous piece of literature from many, many years ago called Ghosts in the Nursery. And the premise of this literature is about when you become a mother, all of the different spirits and people you bring into the nursery with you, first and foremost, your own mother.
Love it. Yes, yes, yes.
And so oftentimes what we'll see over and over again with moms coming in is that these new moms have had a really challenging experience with their own mothers growing up, right? Oftentimes they were neglected, they were ignored, and so now here they are faced with motherhood, and they have they have no role model. Like, nobody told them how to do this.
We have to tell people how to reach Paige Bellenbaum, director of the Motherhood Center. You can reach Paige at themotherhoodcenter.com. You can reach us here at the Positive Mind Center, 212-757-4488. If you have any questions, Paige, we have to go, but we love that you came on to talk about this vital women's issue, and it couldn't be more informative. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate being here. I just want the last point to be, if you or someone you know is suffering, there is hope. This is incredibly common, and that treatment works. Everybody feels better with treatment.
It's documented, folks. Thanks again for calling. Thanks all of you for listening. We'll see you next week. Have a good day.